Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, you're very welcome along to the Huddle Breakdown. It's been a quiet week. It's going to be a quieter weekend as Celtic do not have any games this weekend, or didn't have any games last weekend, and don't have a game the following weekend. Sunday, 21st of January, is the next time we will see Celtic playing, but hopefully by that stage we will have a couple of new faces donning the hoops as the January transfer window kicks on. There is finally some news in the January transfer window, with Celtic being linked with Rapid Vienna winger Nicholas Kuhn. So we're going to be chatting about him on today's podcast. And we asked you for your questions on Twitter as well, so we're going to be going through those as well. James Allen, you're very welcome along. How are you?
All good.
Doing well, trying to stay resilient against the latest epidemic wave of COVID, which has invaded my household. But we keep the fight.
Yeah, there's like chest infections, coldy, flus, and everything going around. Everyone seems to be getting sick over the last number of weeks. So I have so far avoided that, thankfully. And knowing me, tomorrow will be the day I wake up for it. So fingers crossed that doesn't happen. Now, we asked you for your questions on Twitter ahead of the show, so we're going to go through a couple of them. Now, there is some overlap in some of the questions, so if I don't actually call you out as your name on Twitter, then it doesn't mean I'm not answering your questions. I'm just going to group some of them together as they overlap. And we may as well start with the new guy on the block, or the supposed new guy on the block here. Guys, James, Celtic have been linked with Nicholas Kuhn from Rapid Vienna. They did say that they received a bid from a club that wasn't from Germany. People are assuming that is Celtic, and the rumoured fee is £3 million. So it looks like Celtic are going to look to bring in Nicholas Kuhn as a right winger. He's left-footed, seems to have a little bit of pace about him by what I've seen, and there could be an outgoing as well. There is rumours that Lila Bada could be out the door as well. So that is unconfirmed just yet, but it does look like Celtic are going to look to bring in some reinforcements at wing for the fact that they are going to be losing players to the Asian Cup over the next few weeks. So have you looked at Nicholas Kuhn just yet? Have you seen any benchmarking for him?
I have. I did my fun little exercise. I haven't shared any of it publicly yet. I'm not sure if I will. Maybe I will. I don't know. But depends on whether I catch the flu overnight or something like that. But I think so. And I'm going to wrap it. I had one of our followers DM me with a question that I didn't forward to the producer of this show because I'm a complete amateur. But I'll roll it in with my answer here. It's Mike from Queens. I think he's an expat living in New York, and he rightly used one of my cross sport analogies to formulate his question. It was a brilliant question. And in the U.S. in baseball, we have something called a quad A player. And what a quad A player, so triple A is the highest level of minor league baseball that players reach typically before they get promoted to the big leagues. So if you're playing, I think the Yankees team is in a place called Scranton, Pennsylvania, or something like that. And if you're playing at Scranton and you get called up to the Yankees, you're a big leaguer. Well, there are these players that are too good to be playing at AAA that kind of bounce around up and down between the big leagues and that level of the minor league play. So they get up and they're not quite good enough at the major league level. They might have some deficits or flaws and aspects of their game where they're just not quite there. And they spend their career, actually very good careers, some of them, kind of doing that yo-yo up and down. And they have utility. They're good, obviously really good players in the grand scheme of the world, but you know, just struggle a little bit. And I think that's, we're stuck in a level of purgatory at Celtic where we're chronically shopping quad A players. Because we're looking at, particularly when we're looking at age profiles that are kind of too old for the modern game. And what I mean by that, we've talked about that in the past where, you know, the market's moved younger, just like with other sports going down. You're getting these huge clubs like Brighton. I think I just saw signing a Ecuadorian kid that's like 16 or 17. I don't know. And so it's going lower and lower and lower in the age bracket. So a 24-year-old, which is, I think, what either Kuhn is or will be this season, that's like middle age now. And I've said that before. And when you're shopping in that market, you know, the likelihood that you're going to pay $3 million and pay the wages that we're paying people and get a player that doesn't have some kind of issue is almost, you know, the market just isn't that inefficient anymore. So what's Kuhn's issue is, I think the questions are surrounding whether his... I joked with someone on Twitter today. He's almost bizarro world Haksabanovic, meaning that Haksabanovic had all these like technical skills and his decision making looked okay, but he just wasn't very fast or quick. And Kuhn, I think, in some ways, is the inversion of that. He's very fast, physically very gifted. I'm just not sure his technical abilities are in the same neighborhood. So his ability to kind of be technical in tight spaces. And so I think he relies on his physical dominance to create rather than actually being technical. You know, it's like the difference between Jota, who used his technical ability to get past people rather than like his explosiveness at times, particularly against higher quality competition. So he definitely fits the deficit that we have relative to Rodgers' preference for pace and power. I think he absolutely fits that. The question is whether or not against a low block on a cold February night, is he going to have the technical ability to break down, 11 behind the ball? I don't know. I think it's mixed. And I looked at him quite a bit. So as a part of a total package, I think he would absolutely be a player at Celtic that could have significant utility. I'm not sure he's the premier signing of quality that's going to be a game changer in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I mean, there are people who hate with a passion when I bring up sort of Premier League stuff, but
That's worse than baseball.
For what you're saying about like the quad A player, that's essentially the player who's really, really good in the championship, but is not good enough for the Premier League. Too good for the championship, not good enough for the Premier League. Kind of fall into that weird bracket. That's sort of the quality of players Celtic have at the minute. You would say that a lot of Celtic players, and I think Ryan Christie is sort of an example of this, they fall into the relegation battle. Pretty good, probably a really, really good championship player, but not quite your elite level Premier League player. They're going to be in a relegation battling team. That's sort of where a lot of Celtic quality has fallen over the last number of years.
I've personally been pissing and moaning for 2 years about our lack of athleticism and size and pace. So I'm not complaining about the signing. Given the reality that the club does not appear to have an appetite to ratchet up the wage structure and or shop at that 5 to 9 million pound level. And that's a whole different conversation as to whether that's smart, what our preference would be. We've talked about that in the past, but given that we kind of seem to be focused on this price level, if we're going, given the makeup of the squad, given the issues that we have in this regard, I'd rather have pace and power in some positions, and this guy certainly fills that. So again, I'm creating more of a nuanced backdrop of who he is about positives and negatives. Grand scheme of things, I'm not against him getting signed, given the context of who we're probably going to be signing.
Yeah. I'm going to break the fourth wall here and tell people about our new software that we're using to edit this, you're allowed to put your hand up to, if you want to say something.
But oh,
it makes your screen bounce. So Alan is literally bouncing on my screen here, trying to get in to say something. So I'm going to bring him in on this.
Brilliant. We'll see if that appears live. That'll be quite funny, I suppose. So a couple of things, James. So when you mentioned the sort of technical deficit, what are we talking here? Are we talking Maeda technical deficit, where he's just simply incapable of beating a man or not playing in the direction that he's facing? And if he's under any pressure at all on the ball, you don't know what's going to happen to it? Or are we talking Palmer levels of technical deficit, whereby he gets the ball in promising positions and you might get an absolutely brilliant cross, but you might get something that sails out of the stadium? So what are we talking about?
I think he's somewhere between Abada and Palmer, meaning that, Maeda is hopeless. He's not hopeless, in that sense, meaning that, I wouldn't even call it's a coin flip when Maeda's on the ball. Technically, it's, more likely than not that it's going to turn out horribly. And Abada's probably a notch up from that, relative to that, particularly when it comes to creativity. And then, Palma, I think, is more about judgment and decision-making than his actual technical ability. I think he's actually very good technically. So I think Kuhn's kind of sandwiched in between there, he's of a level technically. It's just nowhere near the level of where he is physically. And the decision-making, I think, is kind of, not great. It's okay. It's not Mikey Johnston level, like you want to pound him in the head, or Palma at times, where you're just like, I can't believe he just did that. That was so stupid. Like, I don't think he's at that level consistently, but, so it's he's kind of a tweener in there. That is how I would think about him.
Yeah. Well, Alan, you have covered the wing play quite extensively this season. It's one of your main bugbears with the team and the lack of creativity. So, I mean, we will have to see him and judge him on his what he does in a Celtic shirt if he does sign for Celtic. But, I mean, this must be music to your ears that one of the parts where we're screaming out for quality, we might be getting that.
Oh, ish. where I'm coming at this, and apologies if you watch Axon today, or it might be tomorrow, yesterday by the time you see this tomorrow. time travel by podcast, so I might be repeating myself. Got the same t-shirt on, so if it's tomorrow, I'm not wearing the same t-shirt 2 days in a row, by the way, so just get that out there. Where I'm at is what are the priorities in my mind? My focus, and my only focus at the moment, is we've got 16 games to win the league, and we have to win this league. And that really is all that's important to me at this point in time as far as Celtic are concerned. Therefore, I look at any signing decision through the lens of, does it take us closer to winning those 16 games, winning the league, or does it not make any difference, or does it actually harm us? And if... And it's a big if the situation here is one where we're looking at Kuhn because we're going to lose Abada, then that net to me is not a disaster, but it's a really bad thing. Because to me, a fit firing Abada for those last 16 games could actually make the difference in a number of those games, whether it's him coming off the bench for 30 minutes or whether it's him blasting it 60 minutes from the start, such is his ability to influence games in moments and make them count, that I would want him in the team for those next 16 games rather than some guy who's come from a different league, needs to acclimatise, and all the human things that come with that, especially as we're not talking about an elite level winger here. We're talking about somebody who, as James has said, comes with the inevitable flaws that a club like Celtic can afford these days. So If that's the scenario, if it's because Abada's leaving, then I'm not happy. If it's to supplement the squad and Abada staying, then I'm okay with it, I would say. Because if you look at the other options in terms of Yang and Maeda on that side, it's just not good enough. I can't dress this up. I'm not even going to couch it in my usual sort of, yeah, but he's good at this, and yeah, but have you thought about that? It just simply isn't good enough, and it's not going to be good enough to guarantee winning the league in the next 16 games. So we have to do something. And if it's Abada plus Kun, and Kun's an upgrade on Yang and Maeda, which I hope he is, then all good. But if it's instead of Abada, then I'm worried.
Well,
still,
let's keep it on the issue of wing play and maybe bring in some of the questions from Twitter. So this one came in from Ryan Malone, and I'm going to munch together a couple of questions here because it incorporates sort of the fullback situation as well. Ryan Malone asks, what's your thoughts on the poor standard of wing play in terms of the chicken or egg with our fullback play? The eye test is that both Taylor and Johnson have been poor this season. Taylor may be turning a corner. Is this a result of what's ahead of him or vice versa? Mullen also asks, what's Greg Taylor's OBV? Alan, I know you were writing about Greg Taylor quite recently and his sort of performances for Celtic, and potentially you were on the same page as Ryan there that he might be starting to improve as the season goes on. So I'll bring you in first on this one.
Yeah, so a lot to get into on those questions, actually, especially the one about, to what extent are the wingers and who plays in front of the fullbacks influencing how they play? That's a really, really good question that if I'm honest about it, I don't necessarily know the answer to, but I'll have a go anyway. Firstly, to Taylor. So, yeah, there's an article on the Celtic Way today. That's Friday. About Greg Taylor. And really, again, listen, I've already had exchanges on Twitter where I've probably not made myself very clear, so it's probably on me. But I wrote the article because I wrote earlier in the season on the Celtic Way about Taylor, because his form looked to me to be so all over the place that I just had to look at it. And sure enough, his numbers were so down on the previous season. Long story short, he's almost completely turned that around now. And by virtually all of his metrics, actually, packing stats are about the same, but his attacking contribution and his defensive play have both not just gone up to last season's level, exceed last season's level. So that's great. And this is a player, remember, who is now entering his prime years. You know, he's 25, coming on 26. So James might call that middle age stroke old age, but you know, I'm an old guy who thinks that 25, 26, 27 is still the prime bowlers. So listen, and in terms of the OBV question, again, absolutely, his passing OBV, his defensive action OBV, dribbling and carrying OBV, and his overall OBV has gone up dramatically from last season. It's only his shooting OBV, which, you know, he's a fullback, who cares, right, that it's actually gone down from last season. So, yes, it's a good news story. However, all of those things can be true, and I still maintain the position that he isn't the left-back that I think Celtic need to be a credible force in Europe. I can still hold both of those things at the same time in my head, and I probably didn't make the second point in the article. I've not suddenly become, oh, Greg Taylor's the answer to all our questions. Happy that he's in the squad. Love him to death, because my goodness, is he a trier, and is he making the absolute most of all of his attributes? But I still maintain he's not the player that I think Celtic need in that spot to meet the European benchmarks.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. But as you know, if you give a player a compliment, it means that they are the best player in the world. And if you criticize one small part of a player, it means that you hate them and you don't want them to play for Celtic ever again. I'm just going to offer a quick sense on this, because from the eye test alone, I think it is a bit of both. To begin with, I think the fullbacks are improving, but I don't think that has anything to do with the wingers. And I do think the wingers played a large part in the players looking so poor, the fullbacks looking so poor. Greg Taylor, initially, you look at him and he's the Celtic's most comfortable player with very safe passing last year. This year fell off a cliff. What's different? It's a different winger in front of him most weeks ahead. And this time it's Palmer ahead of him. Then same with Johnson. He's not as safe on the ball as Greg Taylor was. But what's in front of him, again, players who can't hold up the ball. Yang isn't good enough to hold up the ball. Maeda basically just bounces off him every single time. So suddenly it looks like Johnson is being sloppy. But then what turns into that is he starts to distrust the players that he's given the ball to, and he stops giving the ball to them. So he then looks like he's a more regressive player, playing it back to the centre back who plays it across the pitch, plays it to Greg Taylor. Greg Taylor goes forward, doesn't trust, let's say, Palmer to get the ball. Then they turn back, and this all turns into sort of a negative circle of negative play. So, Alan, you're bouncing again. I'll let you come in.
Sorry to no, just because a couple of things on both of those that you mentioned. So, Alistair Johnson's had a really, really high benchmark to meet this year based on what he did in the second half of last season, right? He basically smashed all the pass packing records last season. He's by an incredible distance the most prodigious pass packer that I've got records of. You know, that's going back to about the 16-17 season, something like that. So yeah, quite, you know, reasonable sample size of players. So, and he hasn't hit those heights, right? Let's be honest about that. And it's interesting what you say, because yeah, when you've got Maeda in front of you and you give the ball to Maeda and then the ball then 2 seconds later is out of play, then you probably don't get the credit for that pass because it's not complete and the other players. So there's a little bit of that to it for sure. On Palmer, surprisingly, probably to people, is that Palmer's actually, because we used to talk about Jota and how one of his main attributes, and it might sound a bit weird, is he just was really good at getting on the ball. Now that's easy to say, but it's not easy to do because, you know, you're always being marked. You're in the final third usually. So getting on the ball actually involves a lot of movement and a lot of anticipation and a lot of good body shape, and it involves a lot of good technique to take a ball, probably under pressure, control it, and then do something with it. All these things have to happen for you to then receive a ball, especially in the final third. And actually, Palmer is even more prodigious than Jota on getting on the ball. Believe it, yeah. There's actually, you know, Palmer's got some really, really good attributes. So, and that's one of them. He does, and he's a bit like Jota in that they're both volume players. It's just that I think with what James says, it's just that little bit of quality in the final third that Palmer's not quite there, and he doesn't quite have that little bit of pace that Jota had just to get by players a little bit easier. But in terms of coming back to just my last point on the looking again back at the whole team structure, is that I think maybe by happenstance, probably is by happenstance, we've actually stumbled upon, as I said last week, a front five players. If you think about the two number eights, Bernardo and O'Reilly, the two wingers, Maeda and Palmer, and then Kyogo. That is a pressing machine. That really is. Palmer's far more effective at pressing than Jota was. Maeda's far more effective at pressing than anyone else in the squad. So it doesn't matter whether it's Abada or whoever on that right wing. And that is, and Bernardo is the equal of Matt O'Reilly in that regard. So that is a pressing machine. So I think just for that reason alone, that's going to put huge pressure on a lot of teams in the second half of the season. I don't know if that's by design. I suspect it isn't. So in terms of that can take a lot of pressure off the fullbacks, but obviously the more aggressively we press as a team, the more the fullbacks are then potentially, you know, left one-on-one with their wingers as well. So it's got to factor that.
James, I will take you in on this, but one final point that I'll make is just off what Alan's saying about getting on the ball. I actually spoke with a guy who does like training one-to-one with professional players. So in the off-season, somebody will hire him to come in, and the company he works for actually have a deal with a virtual reality company. So what the players will do in their sitting rooms or on the pitch, they'll put on this VR set and they're on the football pitch. And even when they're not on the ball, they have to be constantly moving around to make space. And it's all to just train your cognitive situation and how you deal with the on the pitch thing. So like, I'd love to know if Celtic are using this sort of technology, if they're actually in that advanced stages, or if they're still just, you know, classic training ground sort of situation. But James, your thoughts on the sort of general wing play / fullback play and the influence they both have on each other this year?
I think that the way that clubs have been playing us has, unless they're fairly naive, meaning that there's obviously a range. You know, we talked about that back six that Livingston played and them actually worried about our creativity from the wing play, you know, particularly very wide, didn't really make much sense from my perspective. So I think where our challenges have been is kind of 1v1 with the fullbacks interplaying with their man that's marking them, and then the wingers, that mix is not really good when opposition teams are smart about it and about how they're setting up to defend that. And so I think we're plenty good enough, plenty athletic enough, but it's different. I've talked about, you know, kind of using the analogies of jazz musicians versus, you know, an orchestra, trained musicians in an orchestra, and how, you know, on the margins, Ange was like the orchestra and Rodgers just moves a little bit towards the jazz type. And I think with some of the issues that our players have, meaning that Alistair Johnston is not an inherently creative player, I don't think. I think when he was placed in the system of Ange Ball, he was competent enough and functional enough that the system kind of allowed him to do some of that stuff. And that now that we're having some of these other issues, particularly when defense is set up in a certain way against us, it makes it more difficult. And I, to Alan's point, I think there has been a transition period here, understandably, where some of these guys have had to recalibrate how they're doing their job. And I think that's why we're starting to see some of them come on, because it is a shift. I mean, it's, you know, if you're a guitar player in an orchestra, that's different than pulling off a Jimi Hendrix style solo in free form, and to use a ridiculous example. And so that I think that recalibration process has been underway, but this comes back to optimization. You know, so the last 16 games of the season, you know, we're kind of relapsing back towards, you know, a bunch of what would be the tougher road games, which I have argued this season's actually a positive. Given our issues, I actually prefer playing teams that are inherently deficient relative to us that want to have a go. Right, my fear is bunkered opponents trying to, you know, get a 0-0 game. That's what I think is the biggest threat to the league. So I'm actually okay. I'm more positive going to away grounds for on the margins, the Hearts and the Hibs that might be less defensive. And then we have the, you know, kind of the post split, which again, on the margin, you'll have teams that are going to be less defensive. So I think that these all kind of set up where some of these issues that we've had are going to be less severe. So I'm on a relative basis, I'm actually more optimistic that you're going to see better fullback play, integration with the wingers. That's on a relative basis. We'd still prefer to have more absolute creativity, absolute 1v1 type of talent out wide at both positions. But again, that in any comprehensive sense, that's just unlikely to happen for the rest of the season. So
yeah, we'll have to wait and see over the coming weeks to see if you know, if Kuhn comes in, will that improve Alistair Johnston, or if Celtic bring in a left back, will that impact what Palmer does, or if it all comes together in this post-Christmas last 16. It seems like there's more games. 16 is not a lot of games left until the end of the season. Right, we'll go to another question. Now, somebody gave out to us in the comments a couple of weeks ago for constantly bringing up selling of players, even though like it was incredibly relevant to what we were talking about. So if you were in the comments again, this is not me bringing it up. It's somebody who asked this question. So it's HBK67 on Twitter. He asks that everyone that agrees that Cameron Carter-Vickers is our most important defender, but should we look to sell him in the summer to maximize his value and also note his injury issues? Now, James, I'm going to kick this off with saying that I don't see the point in selling Cameron Carter-Vickers this summer. I think he's well past his maximum value at this point, especially with these injuries coming in, especially with hamstring issues, knee issues, a centre-back who has not reached the Premier League at this point in time and is not going to reach the elite level of football, in my opinion, anymore, given his history and given his injury record right now. So Celtic should just keep Cameron Carter-Vickers until he is no longer the best defender at the club.
He's a very interesting case study, I think, because he is probably at the upper echelons of that quad A player that we just referenced at the beginning, meaning that he's kind of a sandwich player between the championship and the Premier League, probably good enough for the bottom five or six or seven, you know, kind of those yo-yo clubs that come up and down out of the Premier League. But he's, you know, probably not quite good enough on the ball to be at the Premier League level or Champions League level, a possession dominant center back. And I agree with you. Like this is where we talk so much about the player trading model. And you know, I've talked about the idea that it makes no sense for Celtic try to mimic a club like AZ Alkmaar or Salzburg to be almost extreme in the youth movement.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
I think, and even if you look at Salzburg, I mean, they've been playing a guy, I think his name's Ulrich or something. I think he's either German or Austrian. He's been our fullback for them for a number of years now. I think he's like 36 now or 37. You know, one of these physical mutants that stay, you know, kind of like Johnny Hayes, where he's still pretty fast, even though he's an old guy. He's obviously much better than Johnny Hayes. But so creating a resilient quality squad can come in all kinds of different forms. And I haven't believed that Celtic should be a militantly youthful club. I think you need to have a mix of players, particularly given the very unique circumstances for Celtic and Scotland. And I think Carter Vickers, if he would be amenable to it, could be a bedrock type player that if he's willing to stay around for a long period of time, probably has more value to the club than what he's going to get over the long term than what he's going to yield in a transfer fee. The problem with this comes down, I think, is it takes two to tango. And whether or not he's personally going to be okay with that kind of path, career path, whether the financial situation, you know, if he could go play at a Middlesbrough or, you know, one of these kind of middle to higher end championships clubs that might have a shot, or go play for a Luton or, you know, somebody that's maybe into the Premier League, but possibly not going to stick there realistically for long term, and make maybe double the wages and get a, because again, he's already getting to that point in his career where he's going to be starting to think about, okay, I might have one more big contract left. I mean, that's, and I, you know, you don't blame these guys. I mean, their earnings power and their careers are not that long. And the difference between making, you know, 30 grand a week over a 4 or 5 year period on your last big contract versus 60 or 70, that's meaningful. You know, that I've joked before. I mean, 30 grand a week is a lot of money to most of us. But that is not, as I like to joke, FU money. That's not the amount of money that you're going to endow multiple generations of your family and your children and your children's children so that they can be, you know, financially secure. So that's kind of how I think about it. The injury stuff, it's tough. I mean, this is relatively new for him. I don't think he's had chronic injury issues in the past. The knee is much more bothersome than the hamstring, because we obviously don't know, but you know, if it was cartilage and cartilage had to get removed, I mean, that tends to be the kind of thing. And I don't know. I mean, I have no clue, but just as being a sports fan for a long term, you know, when you get athletes that have cartilage removed, even at a younger age, that can create more chronic knee swelling and that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's hard to know on that front, but yeah, I'd be welcome for him staying long term.
Yeah, he hasn't had a long list of injuries. It's just that knee one is definitely one that would worry me if I were, you know, a buyer. But Alan, I hate talking about players in the sense of money, because at the end of the day, they are human beings as well. But where I'm coming from with this is, if you look at the pros and cons, like Cameron Carter-Vickers is our best defender. He's still only 26. If you give him a 4-year contract on good wages, he might be liable to stay, and he would be a bedrock in building a team around him. So you know, if you're getting new defenders in, you know you only need one more defender beside him every single time for probably the next 4 years until he's 30. And then the cons of this is, if you sell him, you're selling one of your best players, and he doesn't have that much value monetarily. You're probably looking at less than 10 million for a player like Cameron Carter-Vickers. So I think the positives of keeping him at the club outweigh any sort of monetary issue that Celtic would face.
So yeah, I agree with all that. But it is coming to the point where a decision has to be made, because he's got 2 years. Well, it's June 2026, his contract runs to. So if we go into next season and he's only got a year left, then effectively we're probably going to lose him for nothing. So you either both parties need to make a decision. And as James says, he's 26 years old. So his next contract is the one that's going to take him into his 30s. And that's going to be potentially his most lucrative contract in his career. And so he needs to think about where's that going to be? All of those things, right? I'm kind of with you both in that I look upon him potentially as being one of those backbone players, one of those that you just hope to try and build. You know, you have a lot of fluency in trading around them, but the likes of him, McGregor, you know, I would actually add Kyogo to that. You want to keep them. I mean, they are a literal spine of the team, but as a metaphorical, you know, backbone of the team as well in terms of the changing room. You've got to have that. You can't be trading everybody all the time, as to James's point. You've got to have a core of pros. And they're really the ones who if they – and this is where it comes down to the human aspect and the personality and the motivations and the attitude, the things that we can't really measure easily, which is, if you've won a treble with Celtic, there's a lot of players who think, right, okay, tick, I've done that. Do I really want to go through and play Ross County 4 times and Livingston 4 times and do it again? And and we've seen it, right? Players like Stuart Armstrong, Ryan Christie, Edouard and Cham, they didn't want to do it. They'd done it once or twice. Tick, tick, tick. I don't need to do it again. I want to do something else in my career. And that's fine. And these are the players you need to trade. But if you've got players like Callum McGregor, who wakes up every day and goes, right, how am I going to win the next game? Doesn't care. He's forgotten about the medals he's won. He's just focusing on the next one. Then you need a core of those players. And I don't know if Carter-Vickers is one of those, but I would hope he is. Listen, the injuries that worry, the knee. I mean, it appears to me, again, this isn't... I mean, I think the data probably hints at this in the sense of that just the volume of everything has gone down with him. Like a lot less passing out from the back aggressively. He's just playing a lot safer. That suggests to me, just watching him, suggests that he's kind of managing his body a little bit. Now, again, is that permanent or is that just short term? Because he's, you know, obviously his body's given up. Hamstring strain, he's been out the last couple of games. So there's definitely some concerns there. So I think this summer is the absolute crux, really, for both him and the club as to what, how do you see your future? Do you want to stay at Celtic? Probably means Celtic putting him on the highest, because he's on, what, somewhere between 20, 30 grand a week. If he's going to get up towards the sort of top end that Celtic pay, which is probably going to be nudging 40 grand a week, as James says, that isn't generational money-changing money, but it's great money, obviously. Or does he think, him and his agent think, he can get the 80, 90 grand a week at, I don't know, West Ham or something, some mid-tier Premier League side or similar. I don't know. But that's what this summer is about, is going to be coming to that decision, because we can't let him go into the last year of his contract with nothing resolved. That would be a mini disaster for the club, I think.
Just because of his size and the way he carries himself and how much of a leader he is, in my head, he's much older. You know, I have him based at like, yeah, sure, he'll be 30 next year. He's 2 years younger than me. He would eat me alive, and he's 2 years younger than me. But yeah, I'm in full agreement with that. It's sort of, this summer is new contract for Cameron Carragher-Vickers or sell him. But my preference would be to keep him at the club for all the reasons I said before. I'm going to smudge a couple of questions together again, because they're all sort of related. One came in from Kieran Duncan on Twitter today. He is asking, have we / the panel Celtic and Celtic supporters underestimated the quality of young Scottish players now playing abroad, example Hickey, Ferguson, Doig, or are there other factors like development, fit of style, current team that need to be considered? Somebody else was asking yesterday, would Lewis Ferguson be a good replacement for Matt O'Reilly if he leaves? And one more person was asking about Rocco Vada, who is apparently off to Bologna in the Serie A, and he's asking why Rocco Vada is good enough for Bologna, who sits fifth in the Serie A, who can't get a sniff at Celtic even when he's looked good in all of the appearances, and our current wingers are underwhelming. So I guess the question is about youth development within Celtic or youth progress within Celtic, taking a gamble on young Scottish players. Now, like, if you look at the conveyor belt of players coming through for Scotland, Scottish young players coming through, not just at Celtic, but just generally, it is on the upper trajectory. I think it's sort of like where Ireland's at the minute, where all the good young players are currently about 18, 19, 20 and starting to really progress in interesting places. Rocco Vada could do that at Bologna. Hickey did that in Italy before he's gone to Brentford. There's a couple of players gone to Liverpool and developing there. So, James, without going into the whole structure of the Scottish League and developing them within, like, you know, B teams or a team in the Championship or things like that, why aren't Celtic taking gambles on young Scottish talent, given the restrictions in Brexit that they can't bring in players that are under 18 from other countries, and instead choosing to go for what you call, like, the sort of the 22, 23, 24 year olds?
I'll first give a plug to a podcast that I was on a few weeks ago now, I guess, called Improving Scottish Football. So for anyone that's interested in this topic broadly, and the reason why I mention it, other than the guy who runs it, Kieran, has been very nice to me, and I think it's a very good podcast, is, and with all the good intentions too, like, it's, he's not doing it for commercial success or making money or anything. He genuinely is looking to try and be a positive force for change. And I think that, so there's a lot of good conversation on that podcast since it started last year. So I've learned a lot, and Celtic are a product of the culture and the environment in Scotland, obviously. I mean, it's like stating the obvious. So some of this stuff is not controlled by Celtic. Some of it is youth development, cultural, and it's not specific even to Scotland. There's a lot of, it's, you know, youth soccer, as we call it in the United States, is a mess as well in many regards, as far as access and societal issues like childhood obesity and diet and exercise. I mean, there's so many complicating factors here. But relative to Celtic specifically, I think that there's been a few structural issues that could have been addressed that aren't. And again, this is not saying that we'd be Man City or Salzburg. We're going to have a feeder club. There's been some structural limitations on that. Would that have been ideal? Has it been proactively addressed the way it could have been? Probably not. But it also is not within Celtic's full remit to be able to control whether there's a youth league or, you know, this issue about having senior clubs having B teams through the pyramid that can't get promoted to the premiership. Like, that's all stuff that Celtic can't necessarily control. What we could have controlled maybe is playing more young players earlier, you know, in a one team league for a decade. Is it nice to win a treble every season relative to the League Cup? Sure. But could we have been allocating those minutes to get experience for younger players to put them in a test? So I think we've done some things that have been too extreme relative to, you know, not developing or giving young players an opportunity. You know, the idea that could and again, I don't know Vada. He's an example. But could Vada have been playing in League Cup games last season? That I'm not saying he should have, but that kind of situation. And it's not, you don't, again, it's not all or nothing. It's not binary. But when you're playing a League Cup game at home to Ross County, the idea that you can't sprinkle in two or three 16, 17, and 18-year-olds in a team that has Callum McGregor and Joe Hart and Cameron Carter-Vickers and Kyogo, I think is just kind of, you know, silly. I mean, you should be able to do that. And, oh, by the way, not dramatically impair your likelihood of beating Ross County at home. I mean, does it swing things on the margin to maybe you don't win in a knockout game in a cup draw? Sure. But, you know, so I think that's been an issue. And the other one's just talent identification. And we've talked about this endlessly. Like, the evidence is there relative to the academy, relative to scouting, the quality of talent that's been brought in at that age group. It just hasn't been very good. And why would those people that aren't able to funnel them into our structure be any better at identifying them when they're 18 at Hearts, like Hickey was, or, you know, and so the last thing I'll say is I think there is a almost discriminatory bias within Scottish football culture to demean the local talent. Which is very interesting. Like, that's not something that I've experienced prior to Scottish football and immersing in it. Certainly not something that I've experienced in my sport fandom in the United States. So I think, you know, there is that kind of de facto, he's not good enough. Someone from outside Scotland is going to be almost, you know, inherently more exciting and interesting. So I think, you know, that definitely, particularly I thought Hickey was like a slam dunk. Like, to me, you know, given his profile, someone playing at that level at Hearts, the idea that Celtic did not sign a player like that, if they could have. Now, again, it takes two to tango. Maybe he had no interest in immersing himself or throwing himself into Glasgow at that time. And again, quite frankly, if I'm his parent, I'm not sure I want him to do that. Like, what's Aaron Hickey's career path now that he's spent that time as a development as a young adult in Italy and now playing in the English Premier League? He's had a pretty good career path, right? So would it have been better if he had gone through Celtic? I don't know. Kind of hard to envision a better path than he's been on from a human development. Like, if it was my son, I'm pretty happy with the outcome, right? So I there's so many of these variables. But I think those are the ones where I think why we've been so kind of deficient in that regard. It's very complicated.
Yeah, there is no simple answer for it. But I do agree with you in those lesser games, let's call them, or even just how many times under Ange, in particular, the last number of years, have Celtic been 3-0 up by halftime? I mean, the result is there. Get the young lads on and give them a chance and see how they develop. And if they're not good enough, they're not good enough. Now, some people might come back with the counter that if they were good enough, they'd be in there. But I don't think that's necessarily true, given the history of young players' developments. Like, if Kevin De Bruyne was good enough, he would have been in the Chelsea team. But he wasn't at the time. He went to Wolfsburg, he developed, and then suddenly he's good enough to be the best midfielder in the Premier League. And then Salah was also not good enough for Chelsea, now he's the best player in the Premier League for Liverpool. I mean, like, this is just the way the football development works. They need to get the opportunities constantly to actually develop. And maybe the change of scenery is actually what they need in some cases.
Real quick, let's remember, again, you go back to listen to Kieran Tierney's firsthand account of this when he was on Open Goal a few years back, is I think he was fourth choice fullback in the youth setup when this is not fourth choice at the first team level when he's like 16 or 17. I think it was 17. And he basically lucked in to getting a shot because of circumstances under Dyla and John Collins and whatever. So this is probably the most talented youth player. It's easy to say that retrospectively now, who at the age of 17 was buried in the depth chart, not even getting like he. I think I'm going off memory here, and I have COVID brain, so I'm not sure this. I wouldn't rely on my memory here, but you know, he was thinking about what's he going to do with his career here. Like he was at that point. At 17 at Celtic in the youth setup. And then he explodes onto the scene. So this is all about, again, they cover this a lot on Kieran's podcast, Improving Scottish Football, about how do human beings actually develop? And the idea that these players are going to be the elite players at 13, 14, even 15, the idea that they're going to be the elite players at 18 even is, you know, provably absurd. And yet that's how a lot of these academies and clubs are running things. So I use that as an extreme example of, to your point, Enda, how do we know Kieran Tierney is going to be good unless he plays at 17 in a League Cup game? You can't.
And just one final point before I get your thoughts on. I think this is a win-win situation for Celtic to have good young Scottish talent at the club. Is when you go to the European competitions, you're not buffing up your UEFA sort of homegrown players with young youth players who have never played at the league, never going to play in the Champions League that season that they're in the squad. And it's always in place of a first team squad member because you need those numbers as homegrown players. So if Celtic just had those homegrown numbers that were actually going to play, were actually pushing for first-team football, then that's a win-win for the club. It's a no-brainer, in my opinion, to try and have the best crop of Scottish players at Celtic.
Yeah, there's no reason Celtic, because of their status in Scotland, shouldn't have the best young players in the country, and certainly at the academy level. But as James says, there's no predicting that will work out. I remember... Again, forgive me, I'm not going to get the dates right on this, but I think sometime, it might have been in the early 2000s, Scotland under-16s maybe got to the European Championship. Or might not even be the 21, it was under-21s. Under-21s got to a European Championship semi-final, right? So you'd think, I mean, for Scotland, at national level, at any age group, that's a major achievement. But if you look at that squad of players, not one of them has... had what you might call a top flight career. I mean, the one that I remember, and this will probably allow you to age it more accurately, was Calvin Miller that was at Celtic. So, you know, he was one that was destined, and he did play actually three times for the first team and played very well, I thought, as a left back, even though he was a forward. But anyway, so listen, this is incredibly imprecise as to the development pathway. We can't ignore the fact that Celtic operates in the environment it operates in, which is utterly, utterly, failing to provide a pathway for young players into first-team football. Having said all that, I don't think Celtic do themselves any favours. I think we've got our first-team squad is far too big. We've got far too many players, and that then limits, the number of youth spots available. Even on a nine-player bench, you're kind of filling it with players that, you know, you probably ought to give at least some game bench time to, because you're paying all these wages, first team wages for them. So it would help if Celtic could, you know, free up some slots to allow some of that nine-man bench to be taken by younger players. And then you've got to have younger players that are good enough. But and then it comes back to the point, well, how do you prove they're good enough? Well, it's not going to be putting nine goals past Stirling University, right? It's going to the only way they really is to throw them in. But then this is where we come in. If Celtic lose two matches in a row, it's a crisis. It's a full-blown crisis, right? And that's on us. We create that environment. We create that expectation. Celtic are used to winning. If you're a Celtic manager and you don't win for three games in a row, three draws even, you're looking at a lot of pressure, right? And that's just the reality of it. So, you know, you have to balance that. I don't think Celtic get the balance right, because as James said, you know, last season when we're romping to a lot of high-scoring victories, why not chuck on kids for even for 15 minutes at the end in some cases, if they're good enough. Only if they're good enough. So there's a lot of things, a lot of factors at play here. And then you come back to the individual scenarios. We mentioned Aaron Hickey. Aaron Hickey had been on Celtic's books as a kid. He'd got released, gone to Hearts. Maybe he didn't want to come back to Celtic. I don't know. We all remember Ben Doak. Celtic suddenly panicked and Ben Doak played the last 15, 20 minutes of a derby. That game in February under the lights that everyone remembers, it was so famous. He actually came on as a sub in that game, and he came on as a sub, in the previous or the next game as well. Didn't stop him going to Liverpool because they probably waved huge amounts of money at him and showed him a tried and tested pathway through to the first team, which Celtic can't do. So all of those things, all of those factors, you know, come into it. So it's not easy. It's not straightforward. Do Celtic do it well? Probably not. They could absolutely do it better. I mean, this season's innovation has been the hookup with the team in Austria's second division. So we basically said, look, you know, forget trying to win the Lowland League. Let's take the best players from that B team and send them out to play Austrian second division football. It's something, right? I don't know how it's going. I don't know how those players are getting on, but at least it's an attempt to be a little bit innovative. So I'll give a bit of credit for that. And you probably, you know, it would be ideal for Celtic to have a team in the Scottish second or third division or whatever. But again, you know, that's probably would be looked down upon by fans of all sorts of other clubs as well. But you know, what would be the long term impact for young Scottish players? When it comes down to it, I still come back to Celtic produce professional footballers for a lot of the teams in the Scottish pyramid. There's a lot of ex-Celtic youth players playing at all levels in that Scottish pyramid. And so, you know, I think that gets overlooked sometimes. I know that doesn't do Celtic any good, but I think they do develop players that, because listen, 99% probably of your players that you produce through the academy aren't going to play in the first team for a club off the size of Celtic. That's just the reality of it. So I think there's some expectation level setting that needs to be done as well. But yeah, listen, no easy answers. Can Celtic do better? Absolutely. Are they trying? I think there's signs that they're being a little bit innovative in some cases, but ultimately, you know, the Scottish structure does is fight. They're fighting against it at every turn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Brentford are a good example of this. Of course, they are, and they took their reserves and their academy teams out of the leagues. And essentially, what they did was they play invitational tournaments. They play friendly matches. Their B team now goes up against, you know, reserve teams from the Bundesliga, or it could be a senior team that need an indoor game or like a in-house game, and they want to test out a few of their younger players. So like, there is things you can do that can take out the whole idea of, oh well, we can only play in the Lowland League. I mean, you can pull from the Lowland League and you can play elsewhere if you want. There's no rules to say you can't. On the idea of like the expectation, I'm not expecting, I don't think, you know, five of the 11 starters for Celtic to be homegrown by any stretch, but I think Man United are a good ballpark of where we should be aiming for. A club the size of Manchester United has every single year had an academy graduate for something crazy like 60 years since the Busby Babes. They've always had an academy graduate in their starting team or their starting squad more than one on multiple occasions. So I think that's a very easy thing to aim for, is that is a player who's a regular starter or a regular squad player are they an academy graduate or are they a young Scottish player who's going to explode in the next couple of years? I think that's a fairly low bar to set for a club the size of Celtic, given the talent levels that are in Scotland that are going abroad at this point. But
well, Celtic would meet that. I mean, McGregor and Forrest have been in the first team squad forever.
Yeah, well, if James Forrest is going to be there for the next 30 years, I mean, like, that's you know, but you know what I'm saying? You just need to continually invest in the youth, and that's something the Celtic have done previously.
Tony Ralston will always be there. Tony yeah. Ralston will always be
there. Right, I think that's where we will park the show for this week. Thanks so much to everybody who got involved in our questions on Twitter, and sorry to those who we didn't cover. I think we covered most of them, though, all bunched in together like that. Like I said, we don't have a game to cover this weekend, so we might do something similar like this again next week, or we will do some sort of deep dive on a player or a position for Celtic. So if there's anything that you would like us to cover, make sure to leave them in the comments below. If you're watching on YouTube, be sure to hit like and subscribe, and you can get this podcast anywhere that you want. It's available on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere you get your podcasts. Just search for The Huddle Breakdown. James, Alan, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend.
Yeah, and we shall chat to you next week. Until then, good luck.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.